This episode, Justice League America number 45 and Justice League Europe number 21, cover dated December 1990. Hello, and welcome to the 45th episode of Justice League International Bwahaha Podcast, a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. My name's Iridimble Shag, and I'm your host, but I'm not doing this alone, folks. Thankfully, I'm going to be joined by two fellow JLI fans to help me cover these issues. We'll chat with my second co-host in just a little bit, but for now, my first co-host has been a friend to the show even before the first episode was ever released. Yes, I'm serious. Way back in the year 2016, 2 months before our first episode premiered, this man was promoting our podcast on Twitter using a photo of himself in a Green Lantern t-shirt and ring while getting a Guy Gardner haircut. I am not even kidding, folks. Since then, he's gone on to host his own podcast, Superman Radio Revisited. And really, truthfully, the hero of the story here is his wife, though. Not only does she tolerate his superhero fashions and haircuts, she even redecorated a chest of drawers using old Justice League International comic book pages. It is a thing of beauty, folks. Please help me welcome Mr. Matthew Cody. Welcome to the New York Embassy, Matt. Thanks for being here, man. How you doing?
I'm great, Shag. Thank you. And I'm jealous of that Double Stuff Award, by the way, that my wife has.
Your wife won the Double Stuff Award. I hope it is framed and mounted above the fireplace, as it should be.
I'm trying to win one myself one day, so.
Yeah, good luck, buddy. We'll see. As I said, your wife's the hero of the family. You got a long way to go.
All right. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good. I am actually really excited because this month, this episode, by the way, folks, depending on when you're listening to it, comes out in February 2022. This month is the 35th anniversary of the first issue of Justice League. Hard to believe. Now, Matt and I are recording a little earlier in the month, so we're actually just 3 days away from the actual anniversary of the 35th anniversary of the show, which blows my mind that it's 35 years ago. And it blows my mind that 5 years ago, we talked to JM DeMatteis right here on the show. I can't believe that was 5 years ago. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm glad to be on for this one then.
So I'm going to assume that you haven't had a haircut since you sent me that photo 6 years ago. Is that fair to say?
No, I've had plenty of them.
Do you have a Guy Gardner haircut right now?
Not now. No, sorry.
I am so disappointed. This is how you don't get a Double Stuff Award at home, folks. Just so you know, this is exactly the way to just throw any chances of that away. I'm deeply disappointed in you, sir.
Hey, I'll do it if it would mean I would get one.
I need photographic evidence coming my way soon, sir. Well, also this month is Valentine's Day, folks. So this is the perfect time to revisit our favorite couple. You know the two, those lovebirds, those wacky kids, the ones that's just the greatest, most wholesome relationship in comic books, Guy Gardner and Ice. So we are doing their second date, essentially, for this episode in issue 45, and I cannot wait. Now, we ended up with giving you this one because, you know, at least as far as I could tell from our early interactions, Guy Gardner is someone that you like quite a bit.
Yeah, not that I necessarily like him, but I always think he makes the stories not boring. You can definitely say that.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. Having someone to bounce off of and creating hostility within the group works especially well with this group since they spend so much time fighting each other.
Yeah, and I do like that he's a brawler and, you know, persistent. And so, yeah, I am a big fan of him, but like, I do understand that he's a jerk.
Oh, I thought you patterned your whole life after him. Okay, all right. Well, folks, before we get too much further, we do need to take a second to thank our sponsors. This episode of the JLI Podcast is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 42% off with free shipping for orders of $50 or more. Each episode will select a collected edition to briefly discuss from the InStockTrades library. Usually it's tied into that month's issue of JLI in some way, shape, or fashion. My pick is not necessarily tied into this issue, but it does tie into the JLI as a whole. I picked Hero Squared Omnibus Trade Paperback. Now, folks, if you don't know what this is absolutely pure joy. It is Keith Giffen and James DeMatteis together again writing funny superhero comic books. It wasn't set in Marvel, wasn't set in DC. It was their own little universe. They focused on this character called Captain Valor and his basically alter ego in another universe, Milo. It's almost like a Shazam thing, but with a really hilarious bent, and the girlfriend's a major part of it. It is super fun. This omnibus collects Volume 1, which is 3 issues, Volume 2, which is 6 issues, Volume 3. Anyway, it's got a whole bunch of guys. It's got a lot of stuff. It's 464 pages. It is freaking hilarious. It normally retails for $39.99, but on in-stock trades right now, you can get it for 30% off, so it's only $27.99, and you will not be disappointed. It is chock-a-block full of JLI kind of humor, and it is one of my favorites. So, now, let me ask you, Matthew, you've had, you know, I don't know, 6 years to prepare for this. The cool kids always bring a selection. Did you happen to bring one, or are you going to disappoint me again?
Yeah, this cool man did, for sure. I have Green Lantern. Oh, that book you picked sounds great, by the way.
Oh, it is. Thanks for listening, but go ahead.
Yes. So I picked Green Lantern, 80 Years of the Emerald Knight hardcover. And the reason I picked this one is because it contains a lot of stories, but among them is Green Lantern number 59 with a first appearance of Guy Gardner.
Woohoo!
And Green Lantern Corps number 201, first appearance of Kilowog.
Nice. And
so they're both prominent in this issue we're going to cover. So I thought that would be a nice pick. And it retails for $29.99. And the in-stock trades price is $17.39. So you save 42%.
That is practically a steal. And those 80 years books are really great. They're really, really cool. So that's a fantastic pick. Wow. Nice one.
Yeah, well thanks. Done, sir. Thank you. 400 pages.
Jeez. That is a heck of a price for that, too. Wow. So, folks, yeah. For these and all your trade paperback needs, please visit instocktrades.com. Now, we also need to take a second to thank you folks at home for your help by supporting our Patreon. Because, you know, running the Fire & Water Podcast Network with so many shows and online hosting and all those different services, it costs a bit of money. And a while back, we realized we needed some help with some of the expenses. So we launched the Patreon, and you folks really stepped up to help keep the network going. So if you're enjoying shows like the JLI Podcast, the best way to support the show is by visiting patreon.com/FW Podcast. And consider supporting the Fire & Water Podcast Network while you're there. And at certain tiers, you'll get mentioned on your favorite shows or your show of choice, just like these folks who asked to be recognized on the JLI Podcast. Our thanks to Chris Lewis, David A. Scudieres, DC Dave, Devin Clancy, George Van Note, Gord Tolton, John Ross Haynes, Kevin Wetter, Mark Baker Wright, Martin Gray, Matt Ev, Maxwell Trevor, Michael Crouch, Michael Zemkowski, Patrick McMullen, Roger Preeb, Rudy Gustuyu, Sean Ross, Tim Price, and then some other bozo that goes by the Superman Radio Revisited Podcast. I have no idea who that clown is. So, folks, again, please visit our Patreon at patreon.com/FW Podcast. Now, guys, every episode, I always tell you, please go out on the social media. Use our hashtag #FWPodcast. You can tag us at JLI Podcast. As I always say every month, guys, it is about building a community of online JLI fans around the show. We need to spread that JLI love and bwahaha ourselves crazy. So, all right, folks, this is the part of the show where we get a chance to chat with our guest. So, Matt, I got to ask you, what is your origin story with the JLI? How'd you find the book? How'd you fall in love? You know, what's, or is this your first time ever reading it? Which I'm pretty sure it's not. But anyway, what's your history with the book, man?
All right, definitely not. So, comic books were around the house growing up for as long as I can remember, but it's probably about like a shoebox size amount. And I grew up in Colo, which is a small town in Iowa. At some point, my parents took me to a comic book show in Des Moines, and I met a comic dealer named Alan Morton, and he would sell 50 comic books for $20.
Nice.
So, yeah. So I got a bunch of volume that way, and included like memorable, what probably really started me collecting was a bunch of Superman comic books that John Byrne had worked on. And I basically bought anything featuring my three favorite superheroes, being Superman, Batman, and Robin. And I would have chose anything with Batman on the cover. And I know at a subsequent show, Alan had recommended like the Booster Gold series. I think he just had like the full run. So I'm the proud owner of that. And those shows weren't very often, however. And since Cole is a small town, it would take like a trip to Ames for me to be able to get a comic at like Walden Books if we're at the mall. There's also a Hallmark store that sold comics, and that was located by Great Clips. So I never minded getting a haircut because I knew I knew I could get a comic during that trip. And I guess that's probably, you know, 13, so who knows? I probably thought that Guy Gardner haircut was pretty cool. And
I knew I was going to ask about that next. Well done.
Yeah, I used to like to spike my hair, and I used to like to do that Guy Gardner in the summers or so. So, but anyway, so I would make, like, when I was looking at the rack, I would make my decision based on the covers usually. And I specifically remember, like, picking up the first Robin miniseries that way.
So good.
And, yeah, Tim Drake's still my favorite Robin. And, like,
same here.
Okay. But one cover I really remember is Justice League America number 52. And I love that cover and how it looks like this promotional poster for this epic fight between Guy Grinder Gardner and Blue Battling Beetle.
Yes.
So anyway, that issue is probably where I fell in love with this series. And I've since discovered comic book shops and have collected the back issues. And I've also collected various other titles, though. And I haven't actually read a lot of these before. So I wanted to thank you for starting the podcast and giving me reason to finally read them. So it's been a lot of fun reading them in chronological order. And I can say now it is my favorite era of the Justice League.
Awesome. That's a great answer. Good, by the way, you know, complimenting me and guiding you there. So that's wonderful. But no, it's fantastic that you've gotten a chance to rediscover these and take the time to read them and fall in love, because that's great. I mean, it goes to show that these comics are, you know, 35 years old and still hold up. That's what matters, especially for someone who may not have read all those issues back then, but is still enjoying them today. That's awesome.
Yeah. I knew it was good because I'd read, you know, I had like a sporadic collection. You know, I'd read one here or there, but I definitely wasn't like following it month to month.
Well, that's awesome. And, you know, the small town aspect of having to find the comics desperately when you can, I didn't have the, well, I'm not from a very big town, but I had more of an issue of not being able to get anywhere to comic book stores and things like that. So you had to take advantage of what you found on the spinner rack and all that, right? And you
exactly,
made,
exactly.
Yep. And you referenced Walden Books. I mean, Walden Books was like the mecca, man. You go and you like the spinner rack that was weighed down so heavy it made that horrible creaking noise.
That was one of my favorite cameos in Wonder Woman 84, by the way.
You know, I still haven't seen the movie.
Oh, you have not?
I know. I feel
but
like
it takes place in the 80s, you know. There's this right. big mall scene. And anyway, Walden Books
was there. Awesome. And 1984 being in the title was the tip-off for me, Matt. You didn't have to clarify that. But
oh, yeah, okay. You don't have to watch the first 83 of them either to get it. So.
All right, folks. Well, that's awesome, Matt. Thank you so much for sharing. And we're going to go ahead and get into the issue now, folks. Remember, you can go out to our website, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com. There we...
The Batman.
Okay, so anyway, on the website, that is where we're going to be posting some of the images from this issue. So if you can't find issue 45...
Guy Gardner.
If you can't find issue 45... I mean, it's available online. You can do that. You can read it that way. But anyway, you feel free to go out and check out some of the images on the website.
Booster Gold.
What in the hell are you doing, Matt? I'm trying to do this thing. We have an agenda. We're working through it. You know exactly the plan. What are you doing, man?
Oh, was I saying stuff there?
Yeah, I kind of noticed.
Oh, okay.
What were you saying? I mean, I heard you randomly spouting out people's names. Oh, wait a minute. Are you doing that thing we used to do where we asked everybody their favorite member of the league?
Yeah, I was trying to sneak it by, yeah.
I stopped that segment like 2 years ago, and you were only supposed to pick like one. What is wrong with you, man?
Well, Max, John, Beetle, Fire, Ice. I love those yo-yos.
All right, I'll have to give you credit for quoting the comic we're covering. Well done, sir. That's worthwhile. But keep to the agenda, darn you.
I'm sorry. I'll try to stop, Mr. Miracle. And I'm not going to do it anymore. Big Barter!
You'd think with 6 years of preparation, folks, he'd know what he was doing. But anyway, this is Justice League America number 45 from DC Comics, cover dated December 1990. It's on the shelves October 16th, 1990. Cover price is $1 for shiny quarters. Cover is by Adam Hughes and Carl Story, Mr. Carl Story, the man who used to shop at the comic shop I worked at. If you would, Matt, would you describe the cover for us?
Sure. We have an extreme close-up of guys. He's planting a passionate kiss on obviously surprised Ice. He appears way into it, her not so much. And I do think it's a beautiful cover, and I love it.
I agree. It's absolutely beautiful. And what sells it is Ice's reaction. I mean, she's like, she's trying to lean her head as far back away from him as she can. Her eyes are wide open. And now, I'm a little conflicted, though, because, like, you know, part of me, if you step away from just the humor of why it's funny, it's like, it's also a little bit disturbing, because it sort of suggests that the kiss is not necessarily consensual, right? And in this day and age, you know, that's it's a little different than it was back then in the 90s, 80s. Yeah. 90s. Though, to be fair, they have been on dates before. She obviously expresses an interest to him. And we have seen Ice literally knock Guy in his ass before. So we know the lady can take care of herself. So it's, at the end of the day, it's a funny cover. It's not even in the issue. It's just representative. So it's fun. And I like the tagline, "A fool in love." That's great.
Yeah, and I like to think she does knock him on his ass right afterwards.
She probably did.
So did I do want to point out, though, did you notice this on the cover? So you see how, like, just in case there's any doubt, how a fool is in orange there.
Oh, and
the gradient of his hair there, just to, you know, give you a color key there, who the fool is.
That is brilliant. I didn't even pick up on that. That is really, these guys are so clever. That is really well done. That's probably a Gene D'Angelo was the colorist. Hopefully he did the colors on the cover too. So well done.
Take a drink, folks. He didn't notice. That was
God.
Chris Franklin drinking game right there.
I'm sorry, I'm not very observant. And Morge didn't.
No, I had to think hard. What can I try to stump him here?
I walked right into that blindly. That wasn't even in the notes. I just fell for it, folks. Oh, geez. All right, let's get inside here before I get any more embarrassed. Plot is by Keith Giffen. Script is by J.M. DeMatteis. The pencils, by the way, ignore the cover. The cover tells you it's by Adam Hughes and Joe Rubenstein. That is not accurate. The pencils are Russell Braun, and the inker is John Beatty. Now, it does mention they are assisted and abetted by Adam Hughes, Jose Marzan Jr., and Malcolm Jones III. And as we get into the issue, the pages they did is probably pretty obvious. But anyway, letter is Bob LaPan, colorist is Gene D'Angelo, assistant editor is Kevin Dooley, and editor is Andy Helfer. The issue itself is called A Date with Density Part 2, Hell on Ice. All right, you want to start us off, Matt?
Absolutely. Okay, so we open in Maxwell Lord's office, and Oberon is explaining to Max that he is taking a leave of absence to help Scott get his life back in order. Max seems to be taking it pretty hard, as Oberon has been there since the beginning of this version of the Justice League, and even says that in many ways, Oberon is the heart of the group. As Oberon leaves Max's office, he reflects on how the League has become like a family to him, and the only one he may not miss is Guy Gardner. Speaking of Guy, it appears he has somehow convinced Ice to go on another date with him as they return to the New York embassy. But Ice is now fed up with him and his choices for dates, which have included going to an adult cinema and pummeling Black Hand and a date with Density, which was Justice League America number 28, and attending a cockfight. She also does not care to be called Sweet Cheeks and Babe. She says there's not going to be a next time. She is not going out with him again, and slams the door on Guy. So, desperate and persistent, Guy says he will let Ice choose the date if she'll give him another chance. There will be no griping or smart remarks from him, and he even crosses his heart and hopes to die at her insistence. So, then we have the next night. Fire is beside herself that Ice is dating Guy because she finds him repulsive. Ice tells Fire that she has chosen to take Guy to the Ice Capists, and that, I figure, is like the Ice Capades in our world.
Yeah.
So when Fire tells Blue Beetle, Ted cooks up a scheme to embarrass Guy in front of the crowd at the Ice Capist show with the help of Kilowog. And Ted is just very amused by the whole idea.
Well, I'll take it from here. So after a quick restroom break where a child misidentifies Guy as Mo from the Three Stooges, Guy and Ice return to their seats just in time for a special announcement. Tonight features a special unscheduled performance of Guy Gardner on Ice. Guy is horrified to see a very cartoonish, almost like a bobblehead kind of version of himself in his costume skate across the ice, performing ridiculous antics. Now, of course, Kilowog's remote controlling the Guy robot as it entertains the crowd by doing funny stuff like falling on its butt, dropping its pants to reveal heart boxers. Ice tries to calm down Guy, but he finally lets loose a primal scream in a full-page splash of Madison Square Garden. Later at the embassy, Guy has gone brooding and catatonic. Ice guides the zombie-like Guy to his room, thanking him for the love of the evening and expressing her appreciation for Guy keeping his promise and maintaining his self-control. And then upon entering the room, Guy finds the cartoon bobblehead version of himself tucked into his own bed. And that is the straw that broke the Green Lantern's back. Guy explodes with anger, knowing full well it was Blue Beetle and Kilowog who pulled this prank. The results are a hilarious bit where Guy is stomping around the embassy, eventually getting into a fight with Blue Beetle, Oberon, and possibly others. But the best part of it is we never see the fight. We just see these static shots of the embassy or staircases, whatever. And we can hear the shouting from all the characters involved, including Maxwell Lord. It's brilliantly hilarious and flawlessly executed. Now, in all the chaos, Oberon has made his decision to leave the JLI to join Mr. Miracle and Big Barda. Now, Oberon tries to say his goodbyes, but everyone's too occupied with Guy's commotion. In a long, lonely panel, Oberon quietly slips out of the JLI's lives, unnoticed. Then, next issue, we begin a five-part epic featuring the return of the greatest hero in the history of comics. Yes, from out of the Golden Age comes the one, the only, General Glory. What do you mean you've never heard of him? And that is how it ends, my friend. So, Matt, you've waited a long time to talk about this issue. What'd you think of it, buddy?
Oh, I thought it was great. Just all the humor. There's so much that I'm sure we're not going to bring up every single joke, but it's highly recommended. I think it was very entertaining.
It was freaking hilarious. I remember the cover. I didn't even remember the Ice Capist stuff in here. I just remembered it was Guy and Ice on a date. Ha ha ha. And that's funny. And then once I got into it, I'm like, okay, well, you know, Adam Hughes is gone. All right. Well, I'm sure I'll try and enjoy it. Dude, this thing's freaking hilarious. I mean, it is really, really funny. The art is solid. Adam Hughes is gone. I get it. It's a little hard to, you know, go from that to, you know, not having him. But it is still freaking hilarious. It is still well drawn. The facial expressions are great. This is, as you said, highly recommended issue. Super fun.
Yeah, definitely one of those you'd want to hand somebody just to illustrate how the humor of this era was.
Yeah.
Some notes I had for the issue is at the beginning, overall, it fits the theme of the issue, but Oberon thinks to himself in this issue that the Justice League spends more time fighting with each other than they do the bad guys. And this issue illustrates that point with no supervillain to be had.
That's a great point. I mean, that happens a lot where there is no villain. Now, the last couple issues, we actually had, you know, Wally Tortellini, we had some fights, but this one is all Justice League just getting in their own way. And it's brilliant. It's exceptionally well, great for that.
Yeah, after that terrific Tortellini trilogy, it's nice to have, you know, a breather issue where after the harrowing events of that, you know, so even though it got pretty heated in the embassy. And I thought the issue had great humor and character beats and loved it. Ice sees things no one else sees in Guy and says to him that underneath his snarl beats the heart of gold. And I think that when the issue's over, she actually has warmed up to him due to the restraint and self-control he's trying to maintain. And she likes that he went along with her plan for the date.
I think you're right. And I sort of like the cover. I'm conflicted again because, like, Guy Gardner is a horrible person. I mean, he really, really is. He's a genuinely horrible human being. He's fun to read in a comic book because he's not real. But, like, whenever he's around a woman, he's incredibly sexist and he's sex-obsessed. I mean, he's way over the line. And my instinct here, because, you know, I feel protective of Ice, just like every red-blooded American who thinks she's gorgeous and has a crush on her does. And I want to scream like she shouldn't be interested in him.
Right, but, she's so sweet.
Right, but part of me gets it. Like, I have seen this relationship in real life. You know, the sleazy guy who's got some beautiful, intelligent woman that simply adores him. And the woman, in those cases, she either, like, sees past the bravado and the sexism, and she sees the better man that's underneath. Or, you know, in different situations, they're trying to fix that person. Or in this case, maybe Ice is trying to fix Guy Gardner. Either way, because, I mean, when she met Guy, he was a nice guy. He was brain-addled, and he was very sweet when she first met
him. That's
right. So whichever reason that of why Ice is with Guy, there's something genuinely sweet about this nice lady who's smitten with this horrible guy. And here we see this horrible guy is genuinely trying to be a better person when he's around her. And that's uplifting. Now, in real life, I'd be telling her to find another guy. But it's fictional, right? It's fake.
Yeah.
No one can actually get their feelings hurt here. So I can't help but find myself cheering for the relationship to succeed. I want it to.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, because you want him to become a better person. And she's definitely a key to that.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the Guy Gardner we'll see down the line in the Guy Gardner Warrior series or in the Green Lantern Corps and all that. I got to think some part of that, that better person Guy becomes has to do with Ice's influence.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And you know, I've been listening to your podcasting for a while now. And
I would say,
no, I'm a fan, but I would say you're a slightly more redeemable shag these days than say like 10 years ago.
That's very fair. That is very fair.
So as guys, we get better. So, or we can.
We do. I can tell you, and you and I, without sharing too much, we both have daughters. So I know having a daughter really makes you reevaluate a lot of things about the world and realize, wow, I could be better than I used to be. So what else you got in your notes?
I just wanted to mention, because there wasn't like a nice place to bring it up in the recap, but Light Ray was in the issue. Mm-hmm. And so Blue Beetle was introducing Light Ray to the classic television show Mr. Red. Woo-hoo. And he was putting it right up there with the Brady Bunch. So you'd think Light Ray is like not very cultured, being from New Genesis. Mm-hmm. But like later, so guys explaining to Light Ray what the ice capists were, thinking that he has no idea. And he's trying to make it sound badass. Like there's these ice mutants you have to fight just to get in this arena. And so anyway, Light Ray, he gets the last laugh, though, when he tells Guy to give his regards to Peggy Fleming, who I had no idea who that was. But I looked her up, and she was an American gold medalist figure skater in 1968. So that's quite a deep pull there. And then also Icecapades itself, I was looking up what that was on Wikipedia. I just have a paragraph if you're interested.
Yeah, go for it.
So Icecapades being based on Icecapades. So the Icecapades were traveling entertainment shows featuring theatrical ice skating performances. And the shows often featured former Olympic and U.S. national champion figure skaters who had retired from formal competition. Started in 1940, the Icecapades grew rapidly and prospered for 50 years. A decline in popularity ensued in the 1980s, and the show went out of business around 1995. And there have been several attempts to revive the show in its name.
So if it went out in 95, it sounds like we're saying Guy Gardner helped kill it 5 years beforehand.
I think so, yeah. And I wanted to say, I remember just this issue brought up a memory. Like, I took my now wife to Greece on Ice.
Oh, wow.
As a date way back when. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Did you behave like Guy Gardner?
So that's having flashbacks. I'm going to say I was more, well, actually ended up married. So I'm going to say no.
So a couple different things. First off, that's amazing that you took your wife to an on-ice show. That's awesome. You're a good date, sir. Second, I had no idea that Icecapades was a copyrighted name. Like, when I read this issue, I was reading Icecapist as Icecapades in my head. I just thought it was the same thing. And then when I read your recap, I'm like, what is he doing? What is he making a distinction for? And then I realized, oh, Icecapades is a copyrighted name they couldn't use, which is why they called Icecapist. I had no idea. And then when you say you don't know who Peggy Fleming is, that makes my heart hurt and make me feel really, really, really old. Now, I was not around for the 1968 Olympics, no. However, Peggy Fleming was a household name all through the 70s. She was on TV all the time, endorsements and commentary and sports and stuff like that. So when you didn't know who she was, I'm like, I'm so old. I can feel wrinkles. I can feel wrinkles forming while we're recording. Oh, no.
Oh, this is a 35-year-old comic book we're talking about. So
that's true. Yeah. I mean, even the Mr. Ed reference is probably would be lost completely on somebody nowadays. Like, I make my kids watch a lot of old TV just so they know, like, they know who the Munsters is or something like that, but they would have no idea who Mr. Ed is. I mean, no one would, except for us as that generation who grew up watching it in reruns. We're probably the last ones who've heard of it.
Wilbur.
And that bit with Light Ray, that was brilliant. The way Guy is just spinning the story and spinning the story and spinning the story and just on his way out the door. When Light Ray delivered the Peggy Fleming joke, that was hysterical.
Yeah, that was a great zinger he had.
Yeah.
And speaking of celebrities, Arnold Schwarzenegger was mentioned in the issue in a joke that Guy makes. And on page 5, panel 2, I wanted to talk about one panel in particular. So while Fire is trying to talk Ice out of going out with Guy, she says, that's not Mel Gibson waiting for her down there. Hell, it is not even Pee Wee Herman. And that panel just did not age well. So
No, it did not. I mean, yeah, what those two references specifically, wow. Now, there's another thing, too, that didn't age well. There's another mm-hmm. joke where they're on their way into the Madison Square Garden. And there's so many people around. All these kids are having a great time. And Ice says, it's just so gay, isn't it? And she's talking about seeing happy children, you know, happy being the definition of the word gay. And Guy responds saying, that's one way of putting it. And that joke probably would not fly nowadays. But mm-hmm. I'm really not sure it flew back then either. Like, I think it's purposely in there to reinforce what a jerk Guy is.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it is a tasteless joke, but I will say I am actually glad it's in there because, like you say, it does reinforce, like, you know, just the fact that they have a non-PC character. It's kind of refreshing to see that. Like, I don't think we'd see that in a comic book these days. And it reminded me, I could see another character delivering that same line, like Johnny Lawrence from the show Cobra Kai, which is possibly my favorite show right now. He's my Netflix icon, actually, too. So
you make a great point. I mean, these people are real. They are out there. There are people that still talk this way. You know, maybe it's not politically correct to show it, or they don't want to do it in comics. They're afraid to get in too much trouble. But it's a true representation of people that are out there. And yes, as many horrible things that Johnny does, I can't help but laugh my head off every time I watch Cobra Kai. I love that show. It's so stinking good.
So, like, how Johnny Lawrence will say certain things and they're definitely not PC, and I like how Miguel will put him in check.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can't say that. Johnny's like, he doesn't get it. So,
and just like JLI does a great job when Guy Gardner goes too far. I mean, he always seems to get his comeuppance in issues. So
I didn't really think about that. Johnny Lawrence is kind of the spirit animal of Guy Gardner there, or vice versa, or whichever. That's a pretty good connection.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, you mentioned Schwarzenegger too, because, you know, every time I think of Schwarzenegger and ice skating, I can't help but think of Batman and Robin, you know?
Yeah, it's great.
Nice connection there.
Yeah, I could see him being a hero for Guy, same way Sylvester Stallone would be, like the Rambo.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then also at the end, another person that wasn't really mentioned so much, but at the end when there's that great fight you were mentioning that was flawlessly executed, how it just had all the shots, the still shots of the embassy. But I think Orion, so he hears Guy Gardner just causing this ruckus, and he storms up and he just clonks Guy pretty hard. And I think he probably saved Blue Beetle's bacon at the end, but Kilowog probably would have held his own.
Yeah, I would think so too. It did sound like that. Like, all you see are the word balloons, and you kind of pick up the inferences. Like, it sounds like the seat of Blue Beetle's pants were ripped out by Guy Gardner. Then it sounds like Orion literally smashed Guy's head through the roof of the embassy. Because, you know, Maxwell Lord's having a fit about the damage to the embassy roof and why is Guy's head through the ceiling and all that.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's all, yeah. It is hysterically funny. It is so, yeah. It's across like three pages. It's so good.
Yes, absolutely.
So the issue is full of those kinds of like madcap hijinks. It's hysterical. But we got to talk about the fact that it's bookended by these just really emotional moments with Oberon. You really feel the loss of him leaving the team. And Max is right. Oberon is, in a lot of way, the heart of the team. He's been there since the beginning. So, you know, at the very end, Oberon's leaving, right? He doesn't even get to say goodbye to anyone. It leaves you as the reader feeling really melancholy. He even specifically tries to say goodbye to Fire. We've sort of seen the whole will they, won't they kind of thing, flirtation going on with them. So I got a question for you here. So the ending, you know, when he leaves and he doesn't get a chance to say goodbye and all the stuff's going on, are the writers trying to say that real life goes on with us after we're gone? Like when you quit a job or after we die, you know, the place just keeps going without you. Or are they trying to convey a different message? Like, what do you think you're supposed to walk away with here?
Wow. Yeah. I don't know. But that's a very good point. When you leave something in your life, very huge part of your life like that, and he says it's a leave of absence. So, I mean, he can't even separate himself fully from it because, I mean, that's just a nice way to say he's quitting. But I don't know. I hope we see more of them in the future. They'll be back with the Breakdown Saga, right?
I think so. I want to say I remember seeing Oberon on some covers. Again, I try not to read ahead, so it's been 30 years. I can't remember, but I would find it hard to believe that Oberon doesn't find his way back in at some point.
Yeah, so, and that did hurt when he was leaving. I mean, you could feel his sadness. That melancholy is the perfect word there.
Yeah, and they very purposely did like this long shot of the hallway, which is a like a cinematographic technique when you're filming movies too, to make a scene feel a certain way. The shot just looks lonely. It looks like a lonely shot, and he's so tiny, and the door's so big, and it's just it really hits home.
Yeah, I agree.
We're gonna miss Oberon. Elrond is a super fun replacement. I mean, it's the best analogy I can use, and this is a Fire and Water callback here. It's sort of like Cheers. You know, we hated to lose Coach. when the actor passed away. But we got Woody on the show, which was a great addition. So, we hate losing Oberon, but Elrond's a wonderful addition. So it's you're losing one, but you're gaining something else.
I haven't really watched a lot of Cheers. I'm of course familiar with Woody, but yeah, I'm gonna miss Oberon.
Yeah, and by the way, you just disappointed everyone again. you're just building up negative credit here, man. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'm aware there's a Cheers cast out there.
Just but, a bit. yeah,
perhaps if I watch through that show, then I'll check that out.
Last I heard, it's must-see TV. So come on, give it the ball, man. So speaking back to the ice capists, I love Ice's enthusiasm for the ice skaters, and I love the art in there. Like, I want to mention specifically the dress she's wearing. She's wearing this, it's a black dress, and it's sort of a mixture, it's cleverly done. It's like a mixture of a sexy, sort of well-fitting little black dress, you know, because it's, you know, comes up to about her knees, but it's also got this very, very modest top, which even has some like delicate, like grandmother-like lace. So it manages
to got the white hair, right?
Right, exactly. So it manages to be like sweet and demure, but still a little bit sexy, which is exactly the way Ice always comes off. You know, it's absolutely perfect. Well done for the art team here, who probably don't get enough credit being the fill-ins. I mean, who would want to be the art team coming on the heels of Adam Hughes? I don't think anybody would want to be, right?
Yeah, it's so intimidating. But yeah, I agree. They did a great job, especially with facial expressions. Like there's one on, I'm just kind of flipping through right now, but page 18, panel 4, when Guy's like thinking, kill them all, kill them all, kill them all. He's got the rage.
Yes, absolutely. And they really fought. They knew what had come before, and they leaned into the strengths of the JLI, which is exactly like you said, the facial expressions and things like that. Now, obviously, Keith Giffen would have done the breakdowns to help with that. But I mean, the guys deserve credit for what they put together. I'm really impressed. And like that Guy Gardner, that caricature thing, that thing is hysterically funny. And it looks great.
Yeah.
Oh, one more art thing, since I'm talking about art a little bit. The very last page, right? The whole melancholy page when Oberon's leaving, the first panel there, you see fire, and she's leaning, she's like looking up at the stairs at the fight and everything. And something was bothering me about that outfit she's wearing. She looks like she's getting ready to go to a club or something. And I thought, wait a minute, just a couple of pages ago, she was taking off her costume and saying she's going to bed. Yet here, she's wearing like purple, you know, high heel purple boots, a crop top, this belt. She's obviously going clubbing. And I think she's basically just lied to Ice and to ditch her so she could go out and have fun, I think is what she did.
Wow, yeah. I didn't even pick up on that, but you're probably right. Knowing B.
No, what a friend. So, in fact, here's how good of a friend Beatrice is in this issue. She calls Tora by the name Tara the whole issue long. I don't know what's up with that. It's Tara, not Tora. Tora, pun intended. What is up with that?
Her Brazilian accent.
I think you just no-prized it. There you go. Well done.
or maybe it's just like her name that only she calls her. Or is it Tora Olofsdottir, I want to say?
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, okay. But I saw that note you had and I was like, oh yeah, it is Tora. But I totally went with Tara, but I did think it sounded wrong.
Yeah, I didn't catch it till the second time I was reading it through. I was something's not right. And then it came to me, the Tora thing. So that was weird.
Yeah.
So the date overall, it's like, you know, obviously Guy is a royal pain. He's a handful. You know, he lost his cool. He was making all kinds of inappropriate comments. But the fact is, this date went infinitely better than their previous dates. You know, the first one, you mentioned it, issue 28. You know, Guy took Ice to an adult movie theater to watch porn. All right? That's how classy this guy is. Then in this issue, they reference, like you said, he took her to a blood sport match, a cockfight. Good Lord. Seriously?
Wow, yeah. Classy guy.
So really, this date was quite successful and quite sweet by comparison. So I could see why this date, you know, operates as sort of a springboard to really further their relationship.
Yeah, and technically, Guy didn't lose his cool until after Tara left him in his room, right?
Well, he did have that primal scream in Madison Square.
Oh, yeah. You're right about that.
But he didn't go try and kill anybody at that point. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's fair to say he did keep his crap together until the final prank of that creature being in his bed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And once again, it's Blue Beetle who comes up with the harebrained schemes. Full credit to Tim Price, who years ago pointed this out to me, how Booster's the one with the bad reputation. But if you really read these issues, Beetle's the one who always comes up with the ideas. So, yeah, it's once again, Blue Beetle is the troublemaker on the team.
Right. And Kilowog did not really want to do it, but he went along with it. And same with Fire. She was trying to talk him out of it. So, yeah, definitely Ted's the instigator here.
Well, and by the way, in regard to that, like in real life, Kilowog and Fire would have just said, hell no. And just that would have been the end of it. But because it's a story and we need the fun, they went along. But yeah, in reality, they'd be like, forget it, man. You're completely on your own here. And all of that, of course, causes the fight. We've talked about it already, but I just have to give credit to it again one more time. The fight is so funny because it does exactly what is smart, which is what they always do the smart choice. We don't see the fight because our imagination draws it better. You know, that's what's so brilliant about it is that hearing it, you know, they always say, you know, show, don't tell. No, in this case, it's tell, don't show. And it's brilliant, and it just really, really works.
Yes.
All right. Well, overall, super fun issue, and now we have to do the hard part. You ready for this, my friend? We are going to have to nominate the
Pwahaha Award.
And this is where we nominate the funniest moment in the issue. Both myself and Matt will pick one moment, and only one will be awarded the coveted Bwahaha Award. Now, Matt, you're the guest, which is unfortunate for everyone listening. So that means you get to go first. What is your pick for the Bwahaha Award?
All right. My pick is on page 5, panel 1. That whole when guy crossed his heart and hoped to die, that he would behave, man, that got a lot of mileage in the issue. And this is probably my favorite use of it was when Fire's, like I said, beside herself that Ice is going to go on a date with him. And she's saying, I can't believe you're going to do it again. And Ice says, well, he crossed his heart and hoped to die. And B says, wishful thinking isn't going to get you anywhere. That's probably my favorite use of it, just because Fire, you know, she cannot stand Guy for good reason. Ice is her best friend. And
there's another good callback to it later when he's losing his mind finally, and she says, this is on all the way on page 20, she says, Ice says, you crossed your heart and hope to die. He's like, then I'll die, but I'm gonna take Beetle and Kilowog with me, which is a great callback to that too.
Yeah, I almost went with that. Yeah, any of those crossed your heart and hope to die is probably would have been great.
All right, so now my pick is different. See, there were so many good ones in this one. Like, ultimately, I settled on, like, sort of a kapow moment, which is also hilarious, which was page 14, which was the big full-page reveal of the caricature of Guy skating out into the ice. Like, that was a complete what-the-hell kind of moment and was absolutely hilarious. They've given him, like, little kids' buttons on his shirt as well. I mean, it's really hysterical. So I went with that because I felt like that was the big obvious moment. But the one I really wanted to do was the fight at the end. But the fight at the end is spread across 3 different pages. So I didn't feel like I could really say that – I still think that's the funniest thing in the issue. But you can't nominate one specific moment there since it goes on for a while. So all right. So yeah. My hard part is – we've got sort of this big reveal moment compared to yours, which is actually more intelligent because it's strung several ways throughout the whole issue. I don't know. What are you thinking here?
Well, do you want to make something of it? I'm going to stick up for mine because like I said, it's repeated quite a bit by different characters. I think Ted, Fire, Ice. They all mention how he crossed his heart and hopes to die. So, and Guy himself in that panel when he loses it, like you said.
As much as it pains me to do this, I think I'm going to give it to you because you're right. Again, it being threaded through cleverly, you know, like within like a needle and thread, it's threaded cleverly throughout the whole issue and comes full circle at the end. So it's got the better setup and delivery. So I think we're going to have to award it to Guy promising to Ice to cross his heart and hope to die. I think that's what we're going to have to do.
Great. Yeah. I know you're a sucker for those threads when they have callbacks and stuff too, as a fan of the podcast. So.
It's true. Because, I mean, first of all, writing is hard. I mean, I can't write. Worth
I mean, it's an art.
Exactly. Writing is hard. Writing comedy is even harder. So the fact that these guys make it work every month, well done. So, all right. So congratulations to Guy and Ice for winning the coveted Bwahaha Award. Please wear it with pride. It is as tangible as the laughter we give you. Now, Matt.
Actually, it's Fire and Ice, though, that win.
Oh, you want to give it to Fire? Oh, because of that moment? Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know what? It's Fire and Ice Make Steam, so look at that. That's perfect. Ooh, so, yeah. Matt, I need to ask a favor. Would you mind hanging around here for a bit? I am worried about the safety of Blue Beetle and his continued existence. I figure with your talents for haircuts, you might be able to calm Guy Gardner down and saving Beetle's life. Do you mind doing that for me?
Oh, wow. It's like a suicide mission, but I'll see what I can do.
Well, I appreciate that. Hopefully you'll be here when we come back, because we are going to bring you back at the end of the show, assuming you survive the experience. After this podcast promo break, I'm going to head over to the Paris Embassy. Well, actually, I guess it's the London Embassy now, for the 21st issue of Justice League Europe.
Afternoon, everybody.
Ryan!
How's that baby treating you, Mr. Daly?
Like Thanos, snapping his fingers at my bank account.
In that case, how about a beer on the house?
Sure, gotta give my mouth something to do between podcasts.
Say, Ryan, I don't get how you have so much time for podcasting. Doesn't your wife want you spending time with the baby?
Would you? Truth is, I think she's a little worried about how much time I'm spending with the kid, ever since his first words were Dagobah system. Now she wants me to go out and do something mature, something productive, and most of all, something lucrative that can support the family.
So you're going to...
podcast about Cheers, yeah. That kid's not going to start college for 18 years. I got time. Cheerscast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. Coming soon to the Fire and Water Network.
Thunderbolts.
The Thunderbolts, are they the exciting new heroes the world needs?
Thunderbolts, strike!
Today makes at least half a dozen times the Thunderbolts have done the job we used to depend on the Avengers for.
It allowed us to move among you, disguising who we really are, the Masters of Evil.
In what is now becoming an old story, the Thunderbolts once again save the city.
Enough of this hero talk. You will do as you're told.
But
he's right. You may be wearing a Songbird costume, but underneath you're just screaming me.
I can expose all of you right now. So you see, you really have no choice.
You know what? We're done playing these parts.
It's time to live these parts.
No one betrays Zemo.
Figures, just when we go in on this hero thing, our blood runs out.
Avengers, Defenders, Thunderbolts. I make any team better.
We're Norman Osborn's A-team. And he's the big man in charge now.
This isn't the team I used to lead.
You, honey, are under arrest.
You have to fight for what's right every single day, bulletproof skin or not.
The Thunderbolts have worked hard to change people's minds about us. But apparently, we've got a ways to go.
Justice, not entirely dissimilar to Lightning, a Thunderbolts podcast. Now playing on fanholespodcast.blogspot.com.
And now, our coverage of Justice League Europe number 21. From break, and I'm here with our second co-host for this episode. Now, this guest found the same gateway drug into comic books as me, which is buying the Marvel Star Wars comic book on a regular basis. Love it. He is also the producer of the Podcastcadia Network, which sometimes even publishes episodes. Previous episodes have included coverage of Hero Clicks, unrehearsed table readings of beloved sci-fi scripts, and Graphically Speaking, a podcast he and his daughter record about graphic novels. And in the year 2020, the city of Portland voted him most likely to be found dead under a pile of 100,000 comic books. Folks, please help me welcome all the way from the Cascadian Embassy, Mr. Jeff Polaire. Welcome to, well, I was going to say, say welcome to the Paris Embassy, but I guess I should really say welcome to the London Embassy from now on. So anyway, thanks for being here, Jeff. How you doing, man?
Just trying to do better.
Better than what?
Better than Peter Parker.
Oh, where am I going to go with that? Wait. I don't even know what that's a reference to. Is that from the movie?
Yes, that's a quote from No Way Home.
I saw it. I didn't memorize it.
Yeah, Tobey Maguire's Peter Parker says that. Someone asks him how he's doing. He says, just trying to do better.
Spoilers! Well, that's fair. That's fair. So you're implying that you are just a cool youth minister? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Well, I do have my own religion.
I am terrified now, folks. We're not going to go down this path. So, Jeff, you are in my beloved, beloved favorite city of Portland. That is awesome. How's the city treating you?
Well, it's also my favorite city, and the city's treating me well.
Fantastic. They have some of the greatest comic book shops there, guys. Dark Horse Comics is there. So much goodness. And I understand that there are opportunities for people to play HeroClix there.
Yeah, there are several venues in the greater Portland area that do run HeroClix games.
Would you happen to know any of them or any of the judges? Gosh, the man cannot pick up a hint, people.
I know one judge really intimately. That would be me. I judge every week at Generations Coins and Comics in Oregon City, which is Portland adjacent. I play at Gongai Games in Beaverton, which is also Portland adjacent. And while I don't go up there personally to play, I know there's at least one store in Vancouver that runs games every week also.
That's awesome. And what team are you playing this weekend when you play HeroClix?
This weekend, I am playing a Justice League International team with Beetle and Booster and a vehicle that is the Bug.
Oh, man. Hey, folks, I got to tell you, a while back, and I lose track of time, it could have been, I don't know, 1997. It might have been last week. I'm really not sure. Either way, I received in the mail a box chock-a-block full of Justice League International HeroClix from Jeff, which was incredibly generous and so amazingly cool. And I can't tell him how much I appreciate that. So I thank you again, Jeff, for that. Was very thoughtful of you.
Well, you're so welcome. Yeah, for a lot of people, they don't play. They just get it for the sculpts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they don't take up a lot of space. So if you're looking for just a small display of JLI figures, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty neat way to do it.
And they're absolutely beautiful. They really, really are. And if you hadn't picked up on it, folks, yes, the way to get on the show is to bribe me. That is exactly correct.
It worked for me.
So, Jeff, obviously you're a JLI fan. I got to ask you, what's your personal origin story with the JLI? How did you find the characters? How did you fall in love with them?
Well, as someone born in 1973, my first experience with any Justice League was on Saturday mornings.
Woohoo!
The first Justice League comic that I ever owned was Justice League of America number 193 from 81. I wasn't enticed to ask my parents to buy me any more of that series, but I did ask for and receive the first several issues of All-Star Squadron based on the preview in that issue.
Nice.
For a long time, Marvel Star Wars was my only monthly comic book. From there, I moved on to reading G.I. Joe and Transformers. When I did start reading superhero titles regularly, it was almost exclusively Marvel titles. Then in 1990, I'm a junior in high school, I decided to expand my horizons. It seemed to me that the best bang for my parents' buck would be DC's equivalent of the Avengers, Justice League America. My first issue was the recently covered by you, number 39.
Woohoo!
And what a place to start! I had so very little advanced knowledge of who these characters were, but didn't feel excluded. I also didn't know that the Mr. Miracle who dies in that issue wasn't the real one. So this seemed to have real consequences.
Oh, geez. That's right. He did die in that issue. Okay. Wow. It's a big Despero battle. Right, right.
I did manage to find issue 38 still on the stands about the same time. And it has such a different tone, but was still so enjoyable. And so I added Justice League America to my pull list at the comic shop. Well, back then it was called Pegasus. Now it's called Things from Another World. And then quarter boxes at the Portland Comic Book Show and lots of patience eventually brought me the rest of the issues and the issues of Justice League Europe. The zero issue in 94 seemed like a good place for me to quit. By then, I hadn't loved Justice League in America in quite a while. Except for the crossover issues, I never bought any Justice League Europe new, just as back issues.
Hmm.
But since then, I've loved every chance I have to revisit the so-called Wahaha era. And as you well know, that includes HeroClix miniatures as well as comics.
That's awesome. That is so cool. Things from Another World, by the way, been there directly across the street from Dark Horse Comics. That is really cool. And how funny that you didn't read Europe Bullet was on the stands, only his back issues. That's interesting.
Yeah, it just never appealed to me.
So does a comic book take on like a different sense when you don't have to worry about what's going to happen next month? So reading Justice League Europe just in back issues, like, I don't know, did that create a different experience as to reading a new comic?
Partly. I mean, for one thing, you have a pretty good idea of who survived.
not always true in comics. People not, do die and come true. Back.
And also, by buying those back issues, often getting several at a time. So not reading just one story, usually reading several issues in a row.
Mm.
So it does, you know, create a different format. It's like binging a TV show these days.
Oh, that's a good analogy.
And also paying a lot less than cover price.
Right.
I don't care quite as much whether or not the story's good.
That's a great point. That's the value for the buy. That's a real good point. And folks, you can probably still find Justice League Europe in a lot of the quarter bins, I bet.
Well, good luck finding quarter bins.
True. Okay. In the 50-cent bins or dollar yeah. bins nowadays, I guess. Yeah, that's fair. All right, well, why don't we get into this, folks? This is Justice League Europe number 21 from DC Comics, cover dated December 1990, on the shelves November 6th, 1990. Cover price $1 for shiny quarters, but maybe not how much Jeff paid. And the cover is by Marshall Rogers and Bruce Patterson. You want to describe it for us?
Absolutely. Like Captain Kirk under a flood of tribbles, the JLE is under assault by falling packages. One might be forgiven for thinking this might be a holiday issue, given that all the packages are wrapped boxes, many of them sealed with ribbons and bows. The JLE members here are Elongated Man, who is cleverly drawn so that different parts of his pliable body are visible around packages all over the cover. He looks a bit worried. Captain Atom looks flat-out shocked. Metamorpho looks resigned. Power Girl looks thrilled. Rocket Red looks, well, armored. You can't really tell how he looks. And whoever is in that Flash costume looks disgusted. One genuinely fun thing about this cover is that the DC Bullet and the UPC box are the only things in the normal places. Everything else, the title, the creator team names, the corner box information are all on packages. So they're at angles in relation to the flat surface of the page.
That's really cool. I say this every month, folks, but there's always seems to be something on the cover I didn't notice before. And I certainly noticed like the main logos on a box, but mm-hmm. I didn't notice that almost everything is on a package at a weird askew angle. That is super fun.
Yeah, it's really cool. According to the Grand Comics database, the line art was by Marshall Rogers and Bruce Patterson with color art by Bob LaRose.
Hmm. So I got to say, I think the cover concept is cute. You know, the idea that everyone is shopping is going to be a theme throughout the issue you'll see, folks. Even though there isn't actually much shopping shown on panel. Either way, shopping's about a big deal. And you're absolutely right, dude. It totally looks like the holidays. When I was flipping through the back issues, you know, just kind of looking ahead at what's up to come, I just assumed this was the holiday issue based on mm-hmm. the cover, because those absolutely look like Christmas presents.
Well, I like the concept of the cover, and the coloring is okay. I don't like the line art, especially Power Girl and Flash. Power Girl looks like the art was just plain swiped from Alan Davis.
Oh, yeah. I see that. Totally.
Yeah. And Flash is incredibly off model.
Yeah.
Captain Atom looks fine. Dimitri is barely visible. And as shapeshifters, I'm more accepting of how Ralph and Rex look. But the two really human looking characters, which would be Power Girl and Flash, the art just did not work for me.
Yeah, you're not wrong. They're off model. They just don't look like themselves. Artistically, fine. They look like people, and they recognize, you know, in that sense, and they look good, but they don't look like mm-hmm. those characters. So we're going to talk a lot more about the art, I think, when we get on the inside. So let's go ahead and get on in there. So, folks, plot and potentially breakdowns by Keith Giffen. Script by Gerard Jones. Guest penciler is Marshall Rogers for the second issue in this three-issue run by Marshall Rogers. Inker is Joe Rubenstein. Letter is Bob LaPan. Colorist is Gene D'Angelo. Assistant editor is Kevin Dooley, and editor is Andy Helfer. The issue itself was called Blood, Sweat, and Tabloids. You want to start us off with a recap, Jeff?
I will. Atop the embassy, two flags do wave, while inside things are less than grave. Their Paris home gone to hither and down, the League has moved to London town. Nathaniel of the family Adam, known far and wide as Captain Adam, converses with Catherine Colbert, she of the mind as sharp as the claws of a bear. They speak of the move, how the JLE adjusts to the groove. Elongated Ralph, what a man, summons the pair to heed Max's plan. Upon a televisual screen, Max Lord of New York can be seen. A minor change he has in mind, and has decided that now is the time. In charge alone, Nathaniel won't be. Wise Catherine will oversee the charge of this new embassy. Captain Adam will still command in the field, directing his league until their foes yell, "We yield!" Catherine worries with a shock like a bolt that Nathaniel might take this as a grave insult. Instead, what she finds is that this is just the tonic to relieve much stress from the man atomic. Dmitri of Russia prepares to step out with wife and children for shopping about. They invite Silver Sorceress to join them to Street Oxford to buy all the clothing Maxwell Lord can afford. She gracefully declines the invitation most kind. A shopping trip is not what she has in mind. No sooner did the Rocket Red family depart than a blood-curdling scream tears the piece apart. Kara, the power girl, is seething with ire about photos published with her in little attire. She takes her complaints to Nathaniel, who passes the buck. With Kathleen in charge, this task he can now duck. Wally West does intend to spend and spend and spend and spend. He intends to use credit instead of cash, but is stymied by a clerk who wants proof he's the Flash. Another league member, Constance by name, visits her company. Her riches have brought fame. Secretly Crimson Fox, to London she's moved. Her staff glad to see her, her appearance approved. A man with blue wings flies over the town. Despite the great sights, his face wears a frown. Instead of the wings, it may be his dismay that gives him the heroic name of Blue Jay. In her new office, Catherine does sit, speaking to a screen. Max opposite does sit. She tells him her concerns, that mere human is she. Can she command this meta-human menagerie? Max assures her, steamrolling her speech, that he's also just human, he does preach. When she needs to leave to help out a friend, Max feels his little hairs standing on end.
I'll take it from here. Bad news doth Sue impart about Kara's cat. The beast hath engaged with a dog in a spat. Yeah, no way. I'm not doing this. Forget it. I completely bow to Jeff's superiority in writing a recap. Oh my God, sir. It took me like 30 minutes just to write those two lines. Holy crap. All right, well, yeah, we'll come back to that. Let me do the recap. We'll come back to this. You mad fool. All right. So yeah, so Kara's cat has managed to kill some British guy's dog, right? Seriously, Kara's cat is a dog murderer at this point.
And not just a dog murderer, a bull mastiff.
That's true. Good point, yeah. So then we get a lot of like character check-ins, like little one-pagers, like Rex goes clothes shopping, but he struggles with his overly helpful salesperson. Next, Inspector Camus from the Paris Police Department, you guys might remember, he is being reassigned to London to lead a Interpol metahuman crisis unit. And he's miserable because he's now going to be the liaison officer to the JLE. He thought he got away from them. The Silver Sorceress and Blue Jay are way overzealous about meeting Kilowog, as they are desperate to chat with anyone who isn't native of Earth. However, Kilowog has just had enough and wants to get his work done. Next up is Uncle Mitch from Angor, who apparently has a bedroom in the London Embassy. I didn't even know this guy was going to be staying around in the comic. Either way, regardless, Mitch is at Heathrow on his way to Disney World.
Is that who that is?
Yes, yes. It helps because they said his name on the page. But if you don't read, then I understand. Then Kara and Captain Adam navigate the streets of London. And as usual, they make stupid tourist mistakes and learn the hard way how to get around. They also share a friendly moment chatting. And Kara calls out Captain Adam for not being helpful to Catherine Colbert during the transition of power. And he admits that he's been so relieved that he's been probably a little bit unfair. So he agrees to help Catherine. And Kara offers to buy a nice apology gift for him to deliver. So that night, we see Catherine cleaning up the league's database. She purges Wonder Woman from the database with some very strong meta commentary going on here. She says, "Harumph, here's one we can do without. She never even had the courtesy to inform us that she's no longer interested in participating." End quote. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute. And then, sadly, she also closes the file on Animal Man because his own monthly comic has gotten too batshit crazy for the league. Finally, Captain Adam shows up to apologize to Catherine and gives her the gift that Kara picked up for him, and it just so happens to be lingerie. Captain Adam is horribly embarrassed and angry with Kara, but Catherine is flattered and kisses him on the cheek. The issue closes with a couple of guys in black suits complaining about the Paris embassy's destruction. Turns out that months of covert studying of the embassy was wasted. Now they have to start over. And these guys seem strangely similar if you've been reading Justice League America, because they look just like the same guys who were following Wally Tortellini last month. Those guys were also after the secrets of the Justice League. Dun, 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 dun. Next issue, here, kitty, kitty, kitty. Oof. All right. So first off, dude, how long did it take you to write that recap? Because that was insane.
You know, it actually wasn't that long.
Oh, my gosh.
This issue was so dull. I needed something to entertain me.
Oh, no. Your recap probably was the most interesting thing. That's fair, but okay.
This is by far the longest poem I've ever written.
It was very good. It was very,
Thank
very
you.
Good.
Thank you. I had a lot of fun doing it. And since I was babysitting at the time, it was done in little chunks when I was allowed. But, you know, overall, it wasn't really that long.
Okay. All right. So I know you said it was dull. I mean, you're not wrong. There's absolutely no action in this thing, folks. I mean, not a single superhero thing happens. Literally, the closest at any kind of action we get is off-panel when the cat murders a dog. we didn't get to see it. The only superhero costume in the whole issue is Captain Atom. The only superpowers on display are Blue Jay flying around London in basically like bare-chested and in his underwear. Everyone's using their real names, Kara, Dimitri, etc. The only exceptions are Captain Atom, who always goes by Captain Atom. And then Silver Sorceress and Blue Jay, I guess we haven't learned their real names yet. But so other than that, no action at all. But now you said it's boring. To me, I was kind of okay with it. You know, I feel like they managed to cram in a lot of the subplots. You know, having kind of a Chris Claremont-style bonding issue is perfectly fine. You know, last issue was one as well, except we had the action with the Beefeater. But I kind of liked seeing what you know, the personal side of everyone's story.
If you were a regular reader and already intimately familiar with these characters, I could see that.
Yeah.
But as someone just picking this up to read, very uninteresting, very unhelpful. And I like superhero stories that are just a day in the life. I really do. One of my favorite movies is called The Specials. Have you ever seen that?
I have not.
It is one of James Gunn's earlier writing credits.
Oh, okay.
And he's actually one of the superheroes in it. It's about a D-list team of superheroes on a day when they don't have anyone to fight.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I love that movie so much. And, you know, if you've been loving his Marvel movies and his DC movies and Peacemaker, you really should check out The Specials.
All right.
But this, to me, this was just plain uninteresting. Also, you and I are we know our characters. We know who these people are. But Stan Lee is famous for saying, and a lot of people have said this, every issue is someone's first. And you have to be able to introduce these characters. We have to know who these characters are. And this issue is terrible about introducing characters. Captain Atom isn't named until the bottom of the second page he's on. Elongated Man appears more on the cover than in the issue and isn't named at all.
Oh, wow.
His wife, Sue, appears in two parts of the issue, but isn't named, and then it's first name only until the second appearance. Dimitri is identified, although not as Rocket Red, and his family is nameless, so we don't know why these people are in the embassy. There's nothing to identify that Kara is Power Girl. There's a page dedicated to Flash, except he isn't in costume, and a new reader would have to guess he's the Flash based on what the clerk says. There's a whole page dedicated to Metamorpho, but he isn't identified as that or as Rex.
Oh, wow.
Crimson Fox identifies herself as such in the last panel of her page, but I had to guess that it was Constance instead of Vivian because she's not identified by her civilian name.
Oh, just a bit. You took Constance for the number of syllables for the poem, right?
No, I took Constance because Vivian is generally accepted as using a lot more French in her speech.
Okay.
And this issue had a little bit of French in there, but not a lot. So that's why I guessed it was Constance.
You put some real thought into that. I'm impressed. Okay, go ahead.
I put more thought into it than the writer did. We can guess it's Blue Jay on page 10, since Silver Sorceress earlier said that he was going out to see the sights, and he is at least identified later in the issue. And you've already answered this, but reading it, I was wondering who in Apocalypse is the white-haired guy on the bottom of page 17.
Now,
I had no idea who that was.
The only reason you're able to put it together is because on that same page, it starts off by them saying, hey, where's Mitch? So that's where you're supposed to lead into. But until getting ready for this episode, and I happened to read through your notes in advance because you shared them, I didn't even notice how poorly they did introducing the characters and naming them. And this is actually not the first time this complaint's come up. It came up on a back issue a couple issues ago during the Extremist saga. The guest noticed the same thing. You're right. So, yeah, there's a reoccurring theme here where they're not introducing the characters well enough. And that's distressing because you're right. A lot of kids, especially back in 90, people were picking up comics that they just saw randomly in the store. sure. And so that's very disappointing. And I didn't even notice it, but you're absolutely right.
So Catherine Colbert, well identified. Max Lord, who only really appears on computer screens, is well identified. Kilowog, he's pretty well identified.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, most of the team, no idea who they are.
So in other words, the hero, you've named everyone who's the supporting team, like support members, and not the actual players on the team. Yeah.
Oh, except Sue, who even Sue is not well identified.
Right.
And even when she's called Sue, unless you already know, you would not know that she's the wife of the elongated man.
Disappointing. Very disappointing.
I thought so. There's some funny store names based on the idea that British stores and pubs and whatever just seem to take two words and ram them together. One of them, the store that Flash is at, is Stodgepole and Ramsbottom, Gentlemen's Cloviers. And I can't help but guess that this was an anal sex joke because you have pole and bottom.
Well, I was thinking it was more like stuck up, like, you know, what do you pull the stick out of your ass kind of thing.
That could be as well.
That's kind of what I was thinking. It was like, you know, very stuck up, snobby. Sometimes people, you know, claim British people are that way, things like that. So that's what I thought they were going for. But yeah, there were some other fun names, like a thread needle and pudge bowl are pretty funny. Yep. I thought the London stuff made for a fun change. I mean, you get Blue Jay sitting on Nelson's column like a pigeon. You get I thought was hilarious. You get the paparazzi snapping bikini pictures of Power Girl and making her a page 3 girl, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah.
Then Captain Atom and Kara not understanding the London traffic patterns, which is very typical for the Justice League Europe folks to not understand the culture or the way things operate in another country and totally screw it up. So I enjoyed all that. I felt like, you know, there was a lot of missed opportunities in Paris, and I feel like they're taking advantage of the setting for London. At least in this issue, I feel like it worked out well.
So Power Girl's cat.
Uh-huh.
I have a soft spot for strays in the first place.
Okay.
And when Jen and I got married 21 years ago. Wait a second. Today, this is 23.
Yeah, you better not get that wrong.
23 years ago.
Okay.
And a half years ago. Our first cat we got from a shelter, and we named him Londo after the Babylon 5 character.
Nice.
And in our first home, the neighbors complained about him terrorizing their dogs. And then later, when we bought a house that was further out of town, one morning we came out and found that he had come through the cat door and brought us a small owl that he'd killed.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, we asked the vet about that, and he's like, no, cats don't kill owls. It's the other way around. so I, you know, I really have a soft spot for Power Girl's cat because he reminds me of my old cat.
Aww.
And I can't help but wonder, could Power Girl's cat be a Flurkin?
It's not the first time that's been suggested.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That would be a fantastic Marvel DC crossover.
I can't help but think that Chewie, as he's called in the comics, or Goose on the movie, is based on Power Girl's cat.
Oh, that would be, you know, I mean, blonde-haired lady, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities between Carol Danvers and Kara anyway, so.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Okay, well, I wonder whichever writer introduced the cat was a fan of Justice League Europe. Could be.
Captain Atom, in his almost delirious happiness over not being in charge of the whole ball of wax anymore, sings a couple songs in the issue. You know, just a couple lines here.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is Gone Fishing, which is a song that was sung by Bing Crosby and Louis Armstrong, a duet thing. And then later he sings Just a Sittin' and a Rockin', which was a 1941 song that had been performed by Duke Ellington, Ella Fitzgerald, Mel Torme. Now, I know Captain Atom had some time when he was outside of time.
Yep.
You know, he jumped forward. So that he would be singing these, what to us, even the 1980s or in 1990, these would be really old songs. But to him, you know, he's got a kind of like the Captain America Man at a Time thing. These would have been songs that he was familiar with because they're from his era.
Right. He would have been born in the 40s, probably.
Yeah, I thought that was a nice touch.
That's really clever. I wonder if that was on purpose or just by accident.
I really think that was probably on purpose.
I hope so.
These songs, you know, they're kind of deep cuts.
Yeah. I'm impressed that you took the time to look them up. I didn't even think twice about it. So my hat's off to you, sir. Wow.
Well, that's because I'm a professional podcaster.
Professional poet, at least. So about Captain Atom and all that, I love Catherine being promoted to the chief of the embassy and how Max runs the American team. And Captain Atom's now the leader in the field, like Martian Manhunter is. That makes a lot of sense, and I love it. And I love that Captain Atom was thrilled with the change. Like, I was really dreading where that was going to go. I was really worried.
Well, just like Catherine was.
Right, exactly. Well, I was worried that it'd be boring or whatever for him to resent being demoted, or worse. I was actually really, really worried you get some kind of sexist comments like, oh, I'm not going to work for a woman or something like that. Because in the history of this particular comic, just like Europe, you know, sexist comments have happened before. So,
well, and again, someone of Captain Atom's era.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is more likely to make a sexist comment like that.
Well, thankfully, none of that happened. So I felt
not even remotely close.
So I was like actually over the moon and felt like, okay, this is, I mean, it's not progressive, but at least it was not wrong. So I was really thrilled that it didn't go wrong.
I really think Captain Atom would have been relieved even if it had been the cat that was put in charge. He was just glad to be rid of the responsibility himself.
I mean, Justice League Europe has a lot of administrative headaches. Compared to the American, I mean, the American team's got their own headaches dealing with Guy Gardner and all that. They make their own problems there. But the European team, they just seem to be plagued with administrative problems. And so, good for Captain Atom to get out of that role.
Well, and Catherine is so well qualified. Whether she thinks it or not, she is the perfect person for that position.
Oh, her and Sue are the smartest people on the team. I've said it many times.
Hands down.
Absolutely. And it goes without saying, Catherine Colbert is the whole package. She is stunning. She is brilliant. She's got it all. She is the best, most significant member of the team, without a doubt.
Oh, yeah. And since you're trying not to say it anymore, I'm going to say it. She's hot.
Yeah, she totally is. She totally is. Not so much in this issue, though. All right.
No. So, well, that was an art thing. So,
yeah. You want to talk about that for a second?
Yeah, let's. Boy, I didn't like the art in this issue.
All right, folks. Here's my spin on this. Marshall Rogers is a fantastically accomplished artist, all right? Penciler. Joe Rubinstein is a fantastically accomplished inker. But for whatever reason, their pencils and their inks on these characters did not come together in this issue.
No.
It's two great tastes that did not taste great together. And I mentioned Catherine specifically because Catherine and Max especially, not only do they look off model, the art just doesn't look good. Which is weird, because like last month, it was the same penciler, different inker, and that looked pretty good. And so I don't know whether, like speculation-wise, like I don't know if Marshall Rogers just drew like really rough pencils, and Rubinstein just inked it faithfully rather than did embellishment, or maybe one of them was really pressed for time and had a rush. I don't know. It could be a million reasons.
I don't know. You see those names and you expect better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right. And to be clear, we're just talking about the characters. You know, the architecture, the buildings, the rooms, all that, they look great. In fact, the opening splash of the embassy is really, really well done. It's just the people are very off model and not good. I don't really want to dwell on it a lot because, after all, this is just one comic among hundreds these folks have drawn. So, Catherine's hot, just not this time.
They had an off issue.
Yeah.
She is hot at the end of the issue.
That's true. So what does she do at the end of the issue that is so amazing for fans of the series?
Oh, well, the surprise gift, and Cap really should have asked Kara what was in the package.
Oh.
For one thing, when Cap comes in, Catherine is already, I mean, her décolletage, I believe is the French word for it.
Mm-hmm.
her shirt is unbuttoned way down already.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good thing it's a dark room. Va-va-boom. And she's just thrilled with the present that Cap has given her. Now, you called it lingerie, and I think technically that's accurate, but it did seem to be like a nightgown.
Yeah.
So when we're seeing lingerie, we're not meaning like, you know, a lacy bra and some really skimpy panties. It's a very nice, sexy nightgown. But
certainly not work appropriate.
It's not work appropriate, but as I remember, Kara is trying to kind of set Cap up with Catherine anyway, and Catherine is definitely interested. Cap's just a little too old-fashioned, I think.
Right.
And, you know, to make the moves himself. And I don't remember that much going forward from here. I kind of hope something develops for them, because I want people to be happy.
I think something does. I don't know, remember either. But also, over in his own book, he's like hooking up with a different chick all the time, too. So there's that issue.
Okay.
But You know, and something happened earlier, which really throws this off, too, because not to get too detailed, but on page 15, on the fifth panel, when Captain Atom and Kara are out in London and they're just chatting, one of the word balloon tails was misassigned. So they actually assigned a word balloon to the wrong person, which blows the whole joke.
There's a little bend to it, but not enough.
Yeah. No, it's clearly going towards Captain Atom. Kara is supposed to be saying, and I'll buy some, meaning to apologize to Catherine, Kara is supposed to be saying to Captain Atom, and I'll buy something nice for you to give her, a gift to apologize for being a jerk. But the way the word balloon is pointed, it's pointed at Captain Atom, so it sounds like he's saying it. So that's why at the end it's a little confusing of why Kara was involved with the gift. Either way.
Well, I picked it up from context.
Yeah.
And the fact that the next line is, great, thanks, Kara.
Yeah.
I picked up that it was Kara saying it.
Well, you're just smarter than me. So Kara, Kara buys the lingerie and doesn't tell Captain Atom what she's bought. And so it works out in that way. But all of that is not what I was actually going for when I told you to say what the big thing. So the big thing is that Catherine is going through the database and she purges Wonder Woman from database. And
this is beautiful meta commentary.
Exactly. It says it all. I mean, I read it during the recap, but just to refresh, it just says she never even had the courtesy to inform us she was no longer interested in participating. And this is without a doubt the writers taking a dig here. Because according to Keith Giffen, the Wonder Woman office refused to let the Justice League office use Wonder Woman for Justice League Europe, even though it had already been okayed. They had advertisers all the lead up to JLE. You know, they did the first issue and she shows up in like one panel, and then they were told never to use her again. And so this is, you know, 21 issues later, the Justice League Europe team flipping the bird basically to the Wonder Woman office for the way that situation was handled. And I thought it was awesome.
I just don't understand that kind of editorial thing, especially if it's already been pre-approved. The editor-in-chief, whoever the editor-in-chief is of the company, should be able to tell the Wonder Woman office, okay, we understand that you don't want her to be used in this book, but it's been okayed. She's going to be in the JLE.
Right.
And, you know, we've seen the same thing in other DC titles. We've seen it in Marvel titles where one office doesn't cooperate with another one. And it's just, come on, editor-in-chief, throw your weight around. Use some power.
Well, DC, it really was broken down into fiefdoms at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently Keith Giffen came up against the Wonder Woman office, and he came up against the Superman office about the same time when he was doing Legion of Superheroes. And both of those instances really put a bad taste in his mouth for comics at the time. And supposedly at one point he thought about quitting comics altogether because of some of the bad run-ins he had, which is really, thank goodness he didn't.
Yeah.
Thank goodness he didn't.
So you and I both had the same note about purging Wonder Woman's file. I didn't know why Animal Man was being purged. It's not a character I've really ever followed. I just figured something bad had happened to him from the way Catherine reacted.
Are you familiar with Grant Morrison or Peter Milligan?
Yeah, I know the names, and you know, I know they have famous runs of Animal Man. It's never been my ball of wax. So.
That's what happened to him. So,
okay.
Told some pretty crazy, whacked out stories that didn't even make sense really in continuity, but were amazing stories anyway, which is ultimately why he ends up in the Vertigoverse, really.
Mm-hmm.
But it made sense that this wasn't going to work on the team. So this was a nice way to close it out. Buddy was a beloved member of the team for 12 issues, and we miss him, but he's off to a whole wacky world of his own.
Something else that didn't work for me was the joke about Captain Atom and Kara not being able to cross the road.
Hmm. Okay.
They fly.
Yeah, but they're in plain clothes.
He stands, so what? It's raining. It's clearly raining. No one is paying attention to them. They could just take off and land back at the embassy. It's not like they have identities that people are going to say, oh, hey, that was easily this person. And also, this is before London had cameras on literally every corner. There was no reason they couldn't, other than the joke, there was no reason they couldn't just, when I think it's Cap that asks, how are we going to cross the street? And I'm going, you fly! Even if only one of you fly, you could carry the other.
I was going to say, technically, she doesn't fly anymore. She can only leap.
That's right. She leaps. Pretty sure she can cross the street.
Yeah. I just got to chalk it down to they're just having a regular day. You know, they just want to be regular people today. Now, there is a funny bit in here. I was re-examining these panels. If you go to page, 18. And it's basically, it's nice. It's six panels telling basically the story of them waiting to cross traffic. The third panel, I realized in reading, as I was doing panel by panel mode on the digital version, mm-hmm. and it's hilarious. A car drives by and causes this big, you know, splash onto them. Kara purposely stands behind Captain Adam and lets him take it. But it's so subtle in the art, if you're not paying attention, you don't even see it. I think it's hilarious.
Now I see what you're talking about, and that is hilarious.
I think it's hysterical. She's just like, whoa, and she just stepped out of the way and let him take the wave. And that's a compliment to the artist here. I actually saw some notes online about Marshall Rogers' work on this issue that I thought was worth mentioning. One person said that the issue, the artwork has a lot of roominess, like the panels are not crowded. And I thought, oh, you know, went back and looked, I'm like, they're absolutely true. Yeah. That's a good point. They said that later on issues get a lot more crowded. And these, there's a lot of room to breathe. You can see the backgrounds. It's not just a close up of the characters. And then another thing they mentioned was there's not a lot of word balloons on a lot of these pages. And it really gives Marshall Rogers a chance for his storytelling to shine. And it really does. I mean, without the dialogue, you completely see what's going on here. Like even that joke right there about where Kara hides behind him. I mean, all that really works. So that's a nice compliment to the art team.
Yeah. Characters may need work, but that was pretty nice.
Yeah, agreed.
And you know, and I am one of those people that does think the art can tell a lot of the story. You know, one of my favorite comic books of all time is G.I. Joe 21, Silent Interlude, which is, you know, no dialogue in the issue. That's, as far as I know, that's the first time that was done. And it's been done a lot since then. But that is a great story with no dialogue. But it still takes several minutes to read the issue because the story is told so well in the pictures.
Still a very, very celebrated comic today. And I'm not even a G.I. Joe guy. And even I know about that issue.
Yep. Yeah.
Now, I just to say another thing about Marshall Rogers here, folks. So if you're not familiar with who Marshall Rogers is, I understand. But shame on you, truthfully, though. He's a legendary comic artist. He's really known for his work in the like 70s, 80s, beyond that. Probably best known for his work on Batman in the 70s, where with Steve Englehart, they basically redefined Batman as an urban vigilante, helping to shake off all the campy elements from the TV series. So these stories really helped establish the blueprint and set the tone for decades of future Batman stories. I mean, the Batman we grew up with, really. The Dark Knight detective kind of Batman launched out of these stories by Englehart and Rogers.
Well, so, some of the greatest Batman artists of all time were building on that work. Jim Aparo and Neil Adams, they were both building on the Englehart-Rogers Batman.
Now, if you didn't know who Marshall Rogers is, I will forgive you because looking back in 1990 myself, I had no idea who he was. He was just some guy doing a guest stint on JLE. So
every day is a chance for a learning experience. And hopefully right now someone is hearing this. They didn't know that before. And this will be information they can carry forward.
There we go. Or they're all writing in to say, how dare I? I was an idiot. And they wouldn't be that wrong.
Well, that's also accurate. My final note for the issue is to ask why Henry Peter Jirich is in the DC Universe in watching after the JLE.
He doesn't have red hair. But yes, he looks exactly like Henry Peter Jirich. You're absolutely right. These men in black that were over in Justice League America an issue ago are here now. And I like that connective tissue where they're bringing the stories together. But yeah, he totally looks like them. You're right. Overall, this was a fun breather issue. I enjoyed how much was packed into the issue. Like, each character got their own moment, apparently, except for an Elongated Man you pointed out. Thanks for that. Anyway, the situations I thought were humorous, and I chuckled. They didn't manage to, like, transform into, like, wildly hilarious, but I still chuckled. You know, the biggest letdown, as we said, was the art. But I think with stronger art, this would have been remembered as a fun issue.
See, and I don't think the biggest letdown was the art. I think the biggest letdown was not identifying the characters. Yes, I am let down by the art, but not knowing necessarily who all these characters are hurts a lot more, I think.
No, that's fair. That's absolutely fair. All right, with that, we move on to the One Punch Award. This is where we're going to nominate our favorite moment of the issue, whether it's fantastic or shocking or dramatic or funny or whatever. Both myself and Jeff will pick one moment, and only one will be awarded the coveted One Punch Award. Jeff, you're the guest, which is unfortunate for everyone listening. What is your pick?
Well, it's a good thing we're not doing the Bwahaha Award because nothing in this made me laugh out loud.
Yeah.
But my favorite moment is at the end when Catherine opens up the present, and it's a beautiful nightgown that Captain Atom had no idea was in that box, and she loves it. So I thought that was the nicest moment of the entire issue. I enjoyed that part a lot.
If you're a shipping kind of person, it absolutely is a great touching moment because you want those two kids to get together.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like I said earlier, I just want people to be happy.
My moment is in the same scene, but it's different. Mine is her purging Wonder Woman. Yes, I am a vindictive bastard, folks. Her purging Wonder Woman and making that meta commentary and then talking about Buddy. Just that's my favorite moment of the issue. That's the moment that sticks with me. Now we have to decide which one is better. Jeff, may you make your defense?
Well, my defense pretty much is the idea of just wanting people to be happy.
Wow, that's all you got.
Cap made her really unhappy earlier by taking so much pleasure. Kara was right. He really was kind of a jerk about how much he enjoyed losing that responsibility. And that he's bringing her this apology gift is great. That it's not exactly what he might have picked out is hilarious. And I imagine Kara might have had an idea that Catherine would like this. So, but I'm just a romantic at heart, and that's why I really like this. Now, that being said, literally the previous page and purging the files, like I said, I didn't really know why Buddy was being purged, just something must have happened, but I knew enough to really know why Wonder Woman was being purged, and that was pretty funny.
All right, so if I look at this issue in and of itself and not think about the history of this series, then the Wonder Woman and Buddy moment kind of land flat because you don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. If I think about the context of the issue starts with Captain Atom being a jerk and it ends with him making an apology. So it actually makes more sense to give that award. I cannot believe... I feel like I'm losing to a guy who like lives in his mom's basement or something like that. This isn't fair.
Funny you should mention that.
Yeah, that was a plan, folks. Yes, Jeff literally lives in his mom's basement. So
yes, I my family rents a house that my mom owns, and what we consider the master bedroom is in the daylight basement. I literally live in my mom's basement.
Just forget that whole explanation that he gave us, because that actually makes sense. Instead, just remember Jeff lives in his mom's basement.
I am terrible for nerd stereotypes.
So congratulations to Catherine and Captain Atom and the negligee. You have won the One Punch Award. Please wear it with pride. It's as tangible as our love for that moment.
Wait a second. Are they supposed to wear the negligee with pride?
You know what they do in the privacy of their own embassy is completely up to them.
Diplomatic immunity.
Jeff, I need to ask you a favor.
Okay.
Would you mind hanging around here at the London Embassy for a little while and keep an eye on Kara's cat? I don't want it to kill any other innocent British dogs. I don't want them getting murdered.
Innocent British dog is an oxymoron, but I'll still stay with the cat. Like I said, I have a soft spot in my heart for strays.
Aw. Well, don't worry, Jeff. We will bring you back at the end of the show. And while Jeff's taking care of that for us, folks, I'm going to read your listener feedback in a segment called...
Justice Log.
All right. Now, before we get to your feedback, just a couple pieces of information. First off, I want to apologize for the varying sound of my voice throughout this episode. It's been recorded over several different weeks in various stages of having COVID, recovering COVID, and being long past COVID. So I apologize for the variation in how I might sound. The whole family's doing better now, though, so glad to have that behind us. All right, now remember, folks, as far as Justice League International books you can support today, both the Blue and the Gold series and the Human Target series are both on the stands as we speak, so be sure you're picking up those fantastic miniseries. Now, something just for fun, over on our Patreon, in honor of this particular issue of Justice League America and Valentine's Day, I asked, who are your favorite comic book couples? We got lots of great answers from various patrons from all corners of the comic book verse, even one reference to Scott McLeod's Zot. But I thought I would read out a few of the Justice League International related ones. By far, the couple that got mentioned the most on the post by patrons from far and wide were Ralph Dibny and Sue Dibny. So that was absolutely wonderful to hear, because it wasn't just a Justice League International post. It was, you know, what are your favorite comic characters at all? People could have said Peter Parker and Mary Jane. They could have said whatever. But the majority of people did say Ralph and Sue, which made me very happy. So quick shout outs to the folks who said Ralph and Sue: Alex Osias, Keith G. Baker, Michael Ridge, Joe Tonello, Mike Etchison, DC Day, Martin Gray, George Van Note, Damian Drought-Wider, and Ted Kilvington. Also, Mr. Miracle and Big Barda got some shout-outs over there from Michael Ridge, Joe Tonello, DC Dave, and George Van Note. Also, Black Canary, formerly of the Justice League International, and Green Arrow got shout-outs from Alan Wright and Ian Fletcher. Wally West and Linda Park got a shout-out from Steve Givens, and Guy Gardner and Ice got a shout-out from Matthew Cody. Can't possibly imagine why he might be a bit biased there. So, check that out if you're a patron. I mean, there were a lot of other characters mentioned, tons of them, but I had to give shout outs to the JLI folks. So thanks, everybody. Now, remember, regarding feedback, go out on the social media, use our hashtag #FWPodcast, or tag us at JLI Podcast. As I always say, it's about building a community of online JLI fans around the show. And remember, when you're posting your comments, if you're outside of the United States, please let me know, and we will assign you the appropriate embassy, which is good to know also, because if you're international, we have to filter iTunes properly to see reviews. Speaking of which, a huge iTunes thank you to Michael CPA, who gave us a review on iTunes recently. He wrote, "A great comic run. This JLI run was an awesome comic run, and now a podcast by one of the industry's best podcasters. Solid combination." Wow, that is serious praise. Thank you so much, Michael. I really appreciate that. Now, folks, if you haven't left us a review on iTunes, it would really mean the world to us. If you could go out there, it takes just a second, it doesn't cost you anything, and it helps to raise the profile of the show. And if you haven't left a review yet and you don't intend to, well, let's just say I might send Power Girl's cat to your house, and you know what that means for your other pets. All right, now let's get into your comments here from our website, email, social media, all those various places. I'm going to be pulling just bits and pieces because, as usual, you guys have left a tremendous amount of feedback. And we'll be discussing specifically the recent episode featuring Justice League America number 44 with my guest Sidney Franklin, and Justice League Europe number 20 with my guest Inza Morningstar, the 108th Sage. All right, John Coos wrote in. He is the host of the Kalwa podcast. He's also a brand new Patreon supporter of the Justice League International podcast. So thanks so much, John. He signed up after I recorded that first segment, so we didn't get a chance to mention it at the beginning of the show. But thank you, John, for joining the legion of Patreon supporters. John says he started listening to this podcast from the beginning just about 6 weeks ago, and now he's current. Oh my gosh. John, I feel like I owe a special apology to your ear holes for you having to suffer through my voice that much. All right, then we hear from Gus Casals from our Argentina embassy. He hosts podcasts such as Alfred Pennyworth Presents and his Legion 60 Years Later podcast. Gus has lots to say, but just a few things. He says, "Being a little basic sometimes, I tend to think of great episodes based on great issues. But guys, what a great podcast episode. Cindy and Inza really made it. And yeah, the previous sentence implies I don't regard these two issues as great issues, or better said, I didn't. You guys really made me appreciate both a lot more, and that's why I love this podcast." Ugh. Gus, that means the world to us. Thank you so much. Because, you know, I feel kind of the same as you. Sometimes I'm like, I don't necessarily look forward to an issue. But then spending as much time as we do preparing for the podcast, we just discover so many hidden gems in there. So I really, really appreciate it. Then Gus goes on to say about Justice League Europe. He says, "That Kara pinup is great. But the fact that it's not just cheesecake," because, you know, the guys offer plenty of beefcake in that issue as well, "but a complex and well laid out gag with the crowd's reactions and the onomatopoeia shows, once again, a creative team in complete control of what they were doing." Yeah, great. I'm glad you highlighted that, Gus. Thank you. Then we hear from Rob McCarthy from the Hell on Wheels webcomic. Rob says, "Brainstorm is kind of cool in his first story." All right, Rob, thanks for the tip there. I have not read that story. Heard from Justin Keene, who says, "Fun episode." He goes, "Beef Eater was a wonderfully nutty character that fits in perfectly in the cheeky DC universe." Yeah, Jason, we're loving the Beef Eater. Absolutely. Then heard from Chris Lewis from our England embassy. He does the Storium Arc podcast. Chris says, "You asked for some clarification on the British elements of the Justice League Europe issue. The soldiers who wear the tall black furry hats, which are called bearskins, are the Grenadier Guards, and they stand implacably in front of Buckingham Palace. They're not the same as the Yeoman of the Guard, which is a tiny army corps who accompany the monarch on certain ceremonial duties. And for fans of V for Vendetta, they still conduct a ritual search of the cellars of the House of Parliament looking for gunpowder barrels before the annual state opening of Parliament. Thanks, Guy Fawkes." Then Chris goes on to say, it's the regimental uniform that our 90s favorite Beefeater's costume is based on. Well, it's totally ripped off of. If you really check the photos, you'll see Beefeater's costume is almost exactly the same as what the Yeomen of the Guard wear. Then Chris goes on to say, the Yeomen of the Guard are not to be confused with the Yeoman Warders, who are the ceremonial guardians of the Tower of London, the Crown Jewels, and in the old days, any prisoners in the Tower. Wow, thank you so much, Chris, for all the explanations, because clearly us folks here in the States really don't have a handle on this. Then Chris goes on to say, Michael, Esteban, and Lisa are absolutely lifted straight out of the Fawlty Tower sitcom. Lisa and Esteban, in particular, are very good caricatures of the actors Prunella Scales and Andrew Sachs, who starred in the show. Fawlty Towers is revered over here for being very funny for exactly the right length and then quitting whilst it was ahead. Although, that may have something to do with the fact that the writers John Cleese and Connie Booth were going through a divorce during the making of the second series. I believe it was a fairly acrimonious split, so further episodes were never likely to appear. Then Chris says the word twopenny is absolutely fine, if a little old-fashioned, as a Britishism, as in the phrase twopenny halfpenny, meaning very cheap and or inferior. Definitely feels a little quaint and implies that the Beefeater General Glory team-up comic book Twopenny Fun is of a certain vintage. It does imply that the comic book cost two shiny pennies, pre-decimalization pennies. Oof, thank you so much, Chris. You know, after watching Doctor Who for 30 years, you think I would have picked up more of this British stuff, but we appreciate your local perspective. Then we heard from Chris Franklin from the Firewater Podcast Network. He does shows such as the JLU cast, Starman Chronicles, and much more. He's also most famously known as the husband of the guest of the last episode. Chris says, yes, I had every issue of Justice League, Justice League International, and Justice League America at this point, and a few months after, until General Glory. I know it's a broken record, but it was just too farcical for my taste. And around this time is when I stopped buying the Justice League America title until Dan Jurgens came aboard. That also explains why I wasn't showing Cindy the book, because the time we started dating, I had dropped it with issue 52 right before Breakdown started. Likely story, Chris. Likely story. And then Chris says, isn't Cindy great? And despite the number of times you threw off on me, she never really took the bait, did she? Yes, Chris, Cindy was absolutely a wonderful guest, and yes, she stood up for you on many occasions. Then Chris goes on to say, the discussion with Inza was interesting because I'm a huge Marshall Rogers fan, yet I don't own this issue, and I've never read it. I think I bailed on Justice League Europe after the Extremist storyline. It sounds so absurd, but I think I can tolerate the inclusion of General Glory in one panel. I'm going to have to track this one down. And then Chris says, these issues reminded me. Did you know Brainstorm has the honor of being one of the first Justice League villains cast in plastic and sold as a toy? Yes, he was one of the characters included in the Ideal Toys 1966 Justice League of America figurine line. That is crazy, Chris. Now, if you go out to the comment section, folks, you can see where Chris actually posted an image, including a whole bunch of the characters there, like I see Joker and Brainwave and the Key and somebody called Mouse Man and then two other characters I have no idea of. Anyway, you can go out to the website and check the comments from last episode and you'll see that picture there. Thank you so much for sharing that. And how crazy is it that Brainstorm became one of the first Justice League villains to be made into a toy? Bizarre. Thanks so much for sharing, Chris. Then we're from Josh Romano. It says, great episode, Shag. It was so nice to hear Cindy Franklin get to podcast without her husband dragging her down. And I love that you bring guest hosts like Inza in who are fans that grow into podcasters. And then Josh had to point out that Justice League at number one came out on February 5th, 1987, 35 years ago this month, and asked if I feel old now. Yes, Josh, I feel very, very old. Thank you for reminding me. Then we heard from Osamu Hideki Yukinori, who's the son of our dear friend Yuzumi Yukinori. Osamu asked, wait, the Quake Master has a letter T on his forehead? I thought that was a stylized jackhammer. You know, Osamu, it very well could be a jackhammer. That actually makes the most amount of sense, but it sure looks like a T. Then we heard from Michael Kramer, says, I do believe Shag made an error while discussing Dr. Fate. Specifically, Shag mistakenly referred to the female Dr. Fate that appeared in the Teasdale Imperative as Inza Nelson. I believe that at this time, Linda Strauss was operating as the Good Doctor. Michael Kramer, you make a good point. I was absolutely wrong about that. And personally, I'm a little offended, Michael, that you're letting your facts get in the way of me telling a good story. So thanks for that. Then we heard from Evertom Vieira do Carmo from our Brazilian embassy. Evertom says, in Brazil, the translation for the French people saying to Beefeater, they say, hey, monsieur, what is your secret identity? Margaret Thatcher? That is totally crazy. Then Evertom says, I love the fact that despite being a ridiculous character, Tortellini has gained a whole backstory, development, and motivation. I love DeMatteis for that. Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. What such a minor character and yet is so fleshed out. It's crazy. Then we heard from Liz Ann Oswald, who has her own YouTube channel, talking about the Justice League America issue. Liz says, seeing this average Joe with all those different kinds of weapons was fun. Though, yeah, if Crimson Fox had not gotten him fired, this entire situation could have been avoided. Yeah, you're right there, Liz. Then Liz addresses the whole issue with Fire and Beetle playing pool and Fire distracting Beetle. Liz says Fire is leaning on the table to use that position to her advantage. And why not? She knows it'll work for her. She's comfortable with using it, so why not? Beetle has been kind of a frat boy throughout, so he's allowed his weakness to be exposed, so she's exploiting it. All is fair in the game. Absolutely right, Liz. Then we heard from Siskoid from the Canadian Embassy. He's part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. It does shows such as Zero Hour Strikes, Who's Editing, and more. Siskoid says, pastiche is a word I use all the time, so no need to run to the dictionary. But I still wondered how it applied to the story. No write-up uses it because it's not canonized, but I sort of thought that's what Tortellini's code name should be. Interesting. Although I don't know that it strikes terror at anyone when you yell, look out, it's pastiche! Then we have from Martin Gray from the Scottish Embassy, also the Too Dangerous for a Girl blog. Martin says, I love Cindy's origin story. It's so sweet that she and Chris were enjoying DC books as toddlers. Close, but never running into one another. Think a really weird Sugar and Spike. And then Martin says, I'm digging on Blue Jay's paisley waistcoat and flip-flops. Is it wrong that him going shopping with Silver Sorcerers in Paris feeds into my theory that he's gay? Interesting. I hadn't heard that, Martin, but you know what? Maybe that's something we'll see explored as the stories go on. Then we heard from Symbol Pending from the UK Embassy. They also have the Symbol Pending Power Girl blog. Symbol Pending comments on the Justice League Europe issue, says, Inza is an amazing storyteller, and we share an obvious love of Power Girl. The fact that she's probably more covered, Kara that is, than in her regular costume makes the comments even more amusing to me. She also has a full-on Diana haircut here, and stinky as a bonus. Also, her reactions of the four panels near the end are amazing. Yeah, I mean, that's just such a great page. It's absolutely a great page, Symbol Pending. Then for Mike Dynas from our Pacific Canadian Embassy, Mike says, regarding Justice League America, I love Guy's tongue sticking out on the cover. As a reader, you can have no idea who the JLI were, and we get the tone of the comic by looking at Tortellini and Guy. And the way the black rock weighs down Tortellini's shirt as well, and how heavy the suitcase looks, it's perfect. I know Hughes is known for his cheesecake, but to me, he's also has a fantastic eye for detail. You're absolutely right about that. Absolutely. Then regarding Justice League Europe, Mike says, I enjoyed this issue because of the humor compared to the previous extremist storyline, but it's around this time I dropped Justice League Europe and just focused on Justice League America. I'm looking forward to the upcoming shows to see what I missed. Well, I'm glad you'll be hanging around for those segments. Hopefully we'll all find something to enjoy in the issues. Then we're from Jason Lady, author of the young adult humorous fantasy adventure novels Monster Problems and Super Problems. Jason writes in 2 points about this issue. Tortellini is such an idiot. When the villains find him, beat him up, and take their weapons back, there's really no reason he could have fought him off. Sure, they outnumbered him, but he just fought off all those men in black who had guns. 5 to 6 unarmed guys in funny costumes should have been even easier for him to fight off. But he doesn't. But I don't mind it too much because it's so amusing. Then the second point, Blue Beetle beat up a bad guy. Blue Beetle actually did something besides crack jokes and pilot the Team Jet. As a Ted Kord mega fan, this makes this issue kind of a milestone for me. Yeah, you're right, Jason. It is a very exciting when you see Blue Beetle actually act as a superhero in the pages of Justice League International. It's very exciting. Then we're from Eric, who says, meant to comment earlier, I actually had a letter printed in response to the Justice League Europe Beefeater issue. I just sent in a brief letter saying that his plan to join the JLI was, quote, faulty reasoning. Very clever, Eric. And then the Justice League International staff replied, quote, well, he's not a tower of strength like other heroes. That is awesome. Very clever. Also, I just want to say thanks. We got some nice comments also from Kevin Wetter, Hoover Jeremiah, Chris Karam, and Gustavo Marx. All right, folks. Now, this is the part of the show where I thank everyone who shared and promoted the show on their social media timeline. We're talking Facebook and Twitter here. Now, I know it's a long list of names. I get it, folks. But these people showed their support and promoted the show. And that is so valuable and appreciated. So it's very important to me we recognize these individuals. Now, here is everyone who helped promote the last couple episodes by sharing on Facebook or retweeting on Twitter. You can be on this list. All it takes is on Twitter, hit retweet. On Facebook, hit share. So our thanks go to Al Girding, Andrew Lorenz, Between the Pages Blog, Billy Delicious, Canadian Geek, Captain Freakout Psychedelic Radio, Chris Franklin, Chris Lewis, Chris Lydon, Clinton Robin and his Coffee and Comics, Days of High Adventure Podcast, and Fan Films Fridays Podcast, Damian Drowett Whiter, Dave's Comic Heroes Blog, David A. Scudieres, Dr. Jennifer Schwartz Levine, Ed Moore, Gus Casals, Into the Weird, Jake Muir, Jason Pope, Jason R. Lady, Jonathan Dye, John Wilson, Justin Steiner, Kitchy Baker, Liz Ann Oswald, Martin Gray, Martin Kogan, Matt Anderson, Matt Ev, Matthew Cody and his Superman Radio Revisited podcast, Max Romero, Max Traver, Maz of Mazinger 1978 and Homework the Podcast, Michael J. Scully, Michael Kramer, Michael Thomas, Mick Jameson, Mike Dynas, Mike Jameson, Olavo Lima, Paul Keehan, Pulp Fiction Comics Culver City, Rob Kelly and his Digest cast for All Mankind Super Friends podcast, Mountain Comics and Treasury Comics, Sean Ross and his Secret Wars and Beyond podcast, Siskoid, someone who just uses the Japanese symbol for sister, symbol pending, Tim Price and his Outcasters Batman and the Outsiders podcast, Trent Lewis, Willie Yarbrough, and Zarabi. Thank you so much to everyone who helps support the JLI podcast, folks. Your feedback is such a critical part of the show, and this community of JLI fans we have built together is absolutely wonderful. You guys are the best. Now, if I've forgotten anyone, I am terribly sorry. It was probably the fault of Cindy Franklin or Inza Morgenstar. So let me know, and I'll be sure to include you in the next episode. So please keep those cards and letters coming, folks. Go out to our website, it was fireandwaterpodcast.com/JLI. Leave your comments there in the show post. That's where most of the comments are appearing. Over on Facebook, you can find us as Just League International Bwahaha Podcast. And on Twitter, we're JLI Podcast. And email, if you want to reach us that way, is JLIPodcast@gmail.com. My thanks again to Cindy Franklin and Inza Morgenstar, the 108th Sage, for appearing on the most recent episode of the show, and thanks to you listeners for such a great collection of feedback. Now, we're going to take a quick podcast promo break, and when we come back, we'll see if we can bring Matt and Jeff together in the same embassy.
Who's editing? A thought experiment in which Siskoid and his guest appoint themselves editors of a comic book line at DC Comics. But the joke's on them, because they can only use the characters of a specific issue of Who's Who, and in fact must use them. Great ideas? Yes, we think so. Cool reinventions? Of course. Crisis fatigue? We guarantee it. Who's editing? Now on its own feed, only at the Fire and Water Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Révolution est comme une révélation.
What do you get when a fantasy, gaming, horror, sci-fi geek and an Army veteran history nerd want to do a comic book related podcast?
Why? You get the Weird Warriors podcast, of course. Weird War Tales was a 124 issue DC comic book series published from 1971 to 1983.
Along the way, we'll sidetrack on to an occasional special mission where we discuss an issue of a like themed comic book from a different title or publisher.
There are also the rare Road Warriors episodes where we report on comic related road trips like conventions or visiting the homes and grave sites of comic greats.
We'll nitpick what the comics creative team got wrong and crow about what they got right. We'll also break down the facts behind the fiction in the stories, which is sometimes quite weird in its own right. Even the letters page and our favorite ads can't escape our judgment. Just as we can't escape yours in our own dead letter office mailbag.
Torpedo-eating dinosaurs.
Haunted chateaus.
Time-traveling rats.
Zombie robots.
Day-walking vampires.
Gargoyle armies.
And that's just in the first 20 Weird War Tales episodes. So, report for duty with the Weird Warriors podcast with Max and Rich, where we promise to make war
no more.
All right, folks, we are back from break, and yes, it does appear the JLI teleporter has brought both Matt and Jeff together for us. Now, Matt, it looks like you survived. Wonderful. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you being on the show, buddy. It's been a long time coming. Again, you were one of the first people I met when I started promoting the show, you know, quote unquote met, through social media, who I had no interaction with before, and I'm so glad that we've stayed in touch all these years, and I'm thrilled to finally have you on the show. So why don't you tell the folks at home where they can find you on the interwebs?
Sure. I'm Matthew Cody on Facebook, and I'm on Twitter at Radio Superman for the Superman Radio Revisited podcast. And speaking of that, thank you for taking a chance on me to be a guest on your show, because like you said, we hadn't talked before. And I wanted to put this out there because I also am looking for guests, and I have this birthday program. So if anybody's interested, like basically my show covers an episode of the Superman Radio serial, and I would just try to have you, the guest, anybody that would want to, can come on and cover the episode that would basically be around their birth date. That's my birthday program.
That's very clever. That's fantastic. All right, folks. Well, you can reach out to Matt through all the places he mentioned. And in the show notes for this episode, you'll be able to find that contact information so you can catch up with Matt and talk to him about that. That's an awesome opportunity. Thank you for extending that offer to folks.
Yeah, absolutely. And then also, if anybody happens to be anywhere around Cedar Rapids, Iowa, I'm part of a Cedar Rapids comic book club. We have a Facebook group page for that too. But we usually meet the third Thursday of the month at Turtle Power Games. It's at Lindell Mall. So,
oh, that's awesome. You know, because like being a comic fan, a lot of times it's a very solitary fandom, you know, other than like, you know, meeting people on the internet and whatever, or maybe you bump into some of the comic shop, but actually having people locally that you can hang out with and talk about this stuff, that's fantastic, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Because like, I know you've mentioned your wife doesn't really, not really a geek.
No.
And mine either. And I kind of was bubbling over, and it's nice to have some other people talk with. Can't really talk at work about it because they kind of frown upon that in the office. I'm a mailman, so they just want to get us on the street.
So do you ever actually see anyone still getting comic book subscriptions in the mail delivered?
I used to, yeah, but not so much anymore. It's kind of not.
That's sad.
But every once in a while, there's this box that's shaped like a comic coming from eBay, and I'm always trying to be careful with those.
There you go. Mailman gets special attention when it's something he cares about. That's perfect. Well, thank you again, Matt, for being on the show. I appreciate it. This has been an absolute blast. I'm so glad we did it.
Yeah, me too. And if we ever podcast again, let's do it on ice.
Nice! Jeff, this has been awesome. I really appreciate you being on the show. Why don't you tell the listeners where they can find you on the interwebs?
To find my other podcasting endeavors, go to podcascadia.com. There's links there for every episode I've done, and also links to podcasts I enjoy, including a link to the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Aw, you're too kind, sir.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me on, Shag. I just wish it had been for the issue I actually wanted to cover. When we texted about this months ago, I described issue 22, but typed 21, and that's what stuck. It's next month's issue of JLE that I actually wanted to discuss.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea. I just went by whatever number you picked. Oh, yeah. Wow. Well, sorry, next month is spoken for, so...
Yeah, well, so, you know, since I was in my back issues anyway, I went ahead and read number 22, and spoiler warning, folks, it's a great issue.
It is. I read ahead. I wanted to know what happened, so I went ahead and read ahead as well. I don't usually do that, but I couldn't stop myself. So I'll tell you, Jeff, what I always tell my kids, you get what you get, don't pitch a fit. So there we go.
You didn't hear me. Well, actually, I was complaining, so never mind.
Well, regardless, thank you so much for being here, Jeff. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. I hope to make it back on again sometime.
All right, folks. Well, that is going to do it. Now come back next month when we cover Justice League America number 46 and Justice League Europe number 22. And we'll have two more guest hosts to help me cover the issues. And just a hint, Jeff is not covering next month's Justice League Europe. Who will they be? Come on, people. You know how this works. You're just going to have to find out next episode. Thanks for listening, everybody. Until next time, I'm Shag.
And I'm Matthew.
And I'm Jeff.
And you've been listening to the JLI Podcast.
Want to make something of it?